All financial advice provided on this show is for entertainment and educational purposes only. The financial ideas and strategies discussed are only provided as a starting point for a conversation about money matters. With regard to your particular investments and financial strategies, consult your financial planner, CPA, or investment professional. All your financial decisions are yours and yours alone to make and subsequently are solely your responsibility. The information that is supplied through the context of the radio program and any repurposing of its content by the host or network is a combination and collection of solid financial investment understanding, opinion, and comments. This network, show, and its host are not liable for financial strategies, outcomes that you employ in any manner that result in any kind of loss. Shares of corporate sponsors may be the subject of buy or sell recommendations in Jay Taylor's newsletter in accordance with Jay's objective opinion.
Welcome to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, speaking to you from the borough of Queens in New York City. It is the 24th day of May 2023. Today, my guests are Eric Coffin, of the HRA Advisory. He's a co-founder of the Metals Investor Forum. Gwen Preston, who writes the Maven Letter. They'll be with me in the first segment. The second segment, Michael Hudson of Hand and Metals will join me to talk about the projects they have, a couple of, some porphyry copper gold projects in Peru and a sedimentary hosted gold copper silver project with some major companies giving him a hand. It's a pretty exciting story. I hope you'll stick around to hear what Michael has to say in the second segment. But I thought it was good to have Eric and Gwen with me today because the Metals Investor Forum is coming up on Friday and Saturday of this week, May 26th and 27th. And we want to catch their views on the markets, and maybe if we're lucky, they'll share a couple of their top picks and just see what they're thinking and how they're investing, given their views of the markets these days. So thank you both of you for joining me today.
Thanks for inviting me, Jay.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
It's really good. Gwen, I know you've just been on vacation, so I hope you're I hope you're ready for this. I'm sure you are. You're always ready, it seems. At least that's my observation. Always good to hear what you have to say. Maybe we'll start out. I want to ask both of you what your current assessment is of the global economy and the financial markets. Maybe we start with you first, Gwen.
Sure. I mean, I don't know if I have anything that will be particularly new for people out there, except for maybe my take on why gold is doing what it's doing, given all the other things. So the things are, you know, this uncertainty. Like, there was this massive expectation that we had to be going into a recession. And the weird thing, Eric and I actually had lunch just about a week ago, and we chatted about this quite a bit. The weird thing is that we're not seeing recession in the data. Like, it's just not showing up. And that's very unusual. We had this rate hike cycle that was historic in scale and speed. And yet we're not seeing a downturn in the hard data. A lot of the soft data, the sentiment stuff, still says, oh my gosh, there has to be a recession. It's got to be coming. Let's all start to panic. But the hard data isn't showing it. So that's a very strange environment for any investor to know what we should be doing. Mm-hmm. Amidst all of it, so when you're in an environment like that, I think it's not surprising to me that base metals aren't having a heyday, right? Base metals do well when there's a pretty solid expectation that we're going into a growth phase, an economic growth phase, right? And we don't have a solid expectation of that right now. We have are we going to muddle through this and get back into growth? Is that what's happening? Or is this recession that we keep talking about actually going to come and hammer us down? Mm-hmm. And that's not a solid foundation for growth. So base metals are just floundering along amidst all of that uncertainty. We can talk about the longer term picture for base metals, on which I am very bullish, but in this moment, they're just kind of floundering along. Gold, on the other hand, is doing super well. And there's pretty good reasons for that. There's the whole hedge, pardon me. There's the whole hedge of uncertainty thing. I think what really redoubles that is that we've kind of had cycles have been tightened up over the last 15 years. And so investors have been reminded several times, more often than some might want, in the last 15 years of what gold does in a recession, right? It does well going into the recession. And then it does incredibly well coming out of the recession. And so because everybody got reminded of that, sometimes gold is like meh going in and it doesn't really do that well, but oh my goodness, does it ever shoot out the other side of the recession? And so because people have been reminded of that, I think everybody's, there's a lot of, well, no matter whether we have the recession or not, let's get in, because if that shoot out the other side thing happens, I want to be on board. So between the overall, just sort of, let's hedge other things with gold, that more specific reasoning, and the fact that, okay, well, if we don't get a recession, then we're going to get a metals bull market because of that long-term, medium-term even, bullish thesis for metals because of all of the metal demand that is out there and the complete lack of sufficient supply for most major metals. We're going to get a metals bull market, and gold gets to play along with metals bull markets, even though it doesn't have the same fundamentals whatsoever. It usually gets to play along with a metals bull market. So there isn't really, I don't see a good bear case for gold right now on a daily basis. Sure, gold's going to do whatever it's going to do on a daily basis, but big picture wise, and I think that that understanding is just permeating out there. So gold is doing great. It's not shooting to the moon because nobody's still knows what direction things are going in general, but gold is doing well. Base metals are just carrying on, trying to hold ground, not getting any attention. On the stock side, we still have you have to be sort of the top tier stock to get the attention, right? Even in the gold space, you have to be the top tier stock to get the attention. And I don't think that will change until we get to a place of a bit more certainty, because investors are just generally cautious amidst all that's unknown. But that's my general take. Once we have some confidence which way we are going, down or up, then I think the scenarios, the way that one acts in these scenarios will play out. By the way, if you can all hear the beeping, there's construction going on at my house. So I do apologize for that.
It's not coming through with me, but.
Oh, perfect. So, okay.
Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I think your view of things. So one of the things, the equity market keeps humming along, well, not humming along, as you say, Gwen, it's really the top tier stocks that are carrying the major indices. You make the case, it's been a pretty wretched market for most stocks of all different sectors. So it's, and as you say, the juniors that we all know too well are not doing very well. It's the top tier gold stocks as well. And I mean, in fact, that was one of the questions I wanted to ask both you and Eric. Why do you think with gold piercing through to 2000, it's come back a bit now, but still, as you say, very strong. Why are the gold shares lacking or are not really participating? And I guess maybe you've partly answered that. But Eric, maybe you have some thoughts on that.
This was something else when I talked about at lunch. She didn't leave me much, but I'll deal with this. I think, again, it's uncertainty. If you look at it, it doesn't matter what market you look at right now, junior, senior, Wall Street.
Yeah.
Liquidity is incredibly low. I mean, the lowest volume days of the year on Wall Street, I think, were last week. It's just everybody's waiting for the other shoe to drop. They don't know what the hell the shoe is, but
yeah.
Everybody's just kind of sitting back and going, I think I'll wait and see, I'll wait and see some definite direction that I can buy into, be it short side or long side, before I really get into it. And you're definitely seeing that in the juniors. Like there's the liquidity is terrible lately. And that's made it difficult for anything, but as Gwen calls them, the tier one stories, they're the only ones that have really attracted much buying. They're the only ones that have really got much reaction when they put out good news. Mm-hmm. Most other stocks either got sold off or they simply ignored the news when it came along. And I don't see how that changes unless one of two things happens. One is gold goes to some X number, and I don't know what it is, but let's say 2100 just to pick a round number that's a definitive new high. Mm-hmm. Something like that starts drawing generalists in, or the market as a whole just decides what it wants to do. I don't think, sorry about that. I don't think, I don't, much like Winston, I don't see a recession coming in the hard data at all. That doesn't mean the shit won't hit the fan tomorrow, or there won't be some exogenous event. And of course, if there's going to, the most likely exogenous event, if it's going to happen, is probably the debt ceiling negotiations. So, I mean, that could blow things up. But outside of something like that, U.S. economy's slow, but it hasn't slowed that much. Base metals have been a bit disappointing, but I think that's really got everything to do with China. You know, when you're talking base metals, China's the 800-pound gorilla, and probably will be for a long time to come. And their post-COVID boom hasn't really been much of a boom. You just haven't seen the growth acceleration everybody was hoping for, nor have we, at least yet, seen the increase in buying on the base metal side. That said, base metal, by and large, base metal inventories haven't climbed as much as they might have in this scenario, because everybody's got production problems. It's just mine after mine after mine after mine. There's shutdowns, or there's breakdowns, or there's fires, or there's picketers at the gate, or they've just got grade control issues. I mean, you name it. I mean, it just seems like everything that could go wrong at the big base metal mines this year has. And that's why, although the copper inventories have climbed a bit in London and in Shanghai, they've done nothing like what was expected. This year was, you know, Gwen and I, and I'm sure you all share an extremely bullish view of the medium and long term for most base metals, especially copper. But this year was supposed to be a reasonably large surplus because there's two large mines that just started up. So far, we're almost halfway into the year. There's some surplus, but it's tiny. It's like 10 or 20,000 tons as opposed to the 300,000 or 400,000 that was predicted for the year. So it may simply be that, you know, barring a recession, it may be that surplus just does not show up because there's just so many various and sundry production problems all over the place.
Yeah, interesting.
In terms of gold, I mean, comments pretty much match Gwen's. I mean, we have seen a really impressive amount of buying out of central banks. I mean, and that is, you know, that's something that happened far in the past, but it didn't happen for well over a decade. Mm-hmm. And the buying trend is quite strong. And it doesn't seem like there's any chance of that disappearing. That helps a lot. I mean, that helps put a floor under. We're still not seeing a ton of retail buying. I don't think there's a lot of hedge fund buying, but again, some uncertainty happens that scares the equity markets and whacks down the bond yields. And I think you see that buying show up pretty fast. In that circumstance, it would take a little while, probably, for liquidity to return to juniors, just because if the market's freaking out, the market's freaking out. So people, you know, people that trade juniors are still going to be hesitant and making sure things don't go over a cliff, which I don't think they will. I mean, we're going to have a debt ceiling deal. It's just how much turbulence is there going to be ahead of one? It's not that there won't be one. There's going to be one. It's just, you know, is there a shutdown or a partial or whatever before? You know, how far does the game chicken go? Beats the hell out of me.
There will be a debt ceiling for sure. There will be, you know, they'll come to some sort of an agreement. They always do. But there was very interesting analysts that I heard on CNBC the other day suggesting that when that happens is when liquidity is likely to dry up. And her thesis was that what she's saying, the Treasury is not out there borrowing now. They're just drawing down their cash. So when they get the debt ceiling, the Treasury will be back in the market bidding for the savings, the limited savings that are out there. So that could be a time, and it seems to me the policy of this Fed, at least under Jay Powell, is to continue seeing rates rise and get them back to some sort of equilibrium. I think that's his philosophy. He needs to get back and let the markets determine what the real interest rate needs to be and take it out of the political realm, which is something I'm certainly supportive of, but we'll see. I mean, again, the market hasn't, when you just get past those top tier stocks, the equity markets haven't done well. The vast majority of stocks are really sucking wind right now. And so I think, you know, Gwen, you pointed that out. Well, Eric, from what you're saying here about about copper and maybe some of the other base metals, it looks very bullish long-term. And Gwen, we just have to ask you, you're starting a new publication. The name of it has to do with green energy, right? Can you talk a little bit about that and maybe a little bit about your long-term view of some of these energy-related metals, or let's say, green metals?
Absolutely. I mean, so the letter's called Evergreen Investing. And we were chatting a bit before we hit record on this call about how it doesn't matter what you believe about global warming and anthropogenic impacts and all of those things. It actually doesn't matter. What my letter is about is that there is a paradigm shift in how the world operates. And that paradigm shift is the green shift. Mm-hmm. And whenever paradigm shifts happen, I mean, this one is changing how we move, how we eat, how we communicate, how we, like, it's changing a huge number, how we generate power. a huge number of the key things that we do industrially and individually in the world. And a paradigm shift of that scale is going to erase old investment opportunities, and it is going to create new ones. And that is underway. Now, we're having this major moment of uncertainty, and stocks are doing what they're doing, and base metals, a bunch of which are opportunities within this green moment, they're on pause because moments like this will put a paradigm shift on pause. But it doesn't stop it. This is happening. It's very supported by governments around the world, and therefore it is very supported by industry. Along with my colleague Peter, we started Evergreen Investing, which is about how to position within the inputs and innovations that are driving the green revolution. And I was specific on that. I didn't want anything to do with ESG. I don't know what ESG is. It had a heyday. It came off a bunch. Guess what? That's because no one knows what it is. Yeah. Things got mixed up in there that didn't really have any worth being in there. I wanted something a lot more tangible and then also more closely related to my expertise. And so this is the inputs and innovations. So the energies, the metals, the fertilizers, the carbon credits, the technologies for recycling and things like that. How can we invest in those? Mm-hmm. And when I say we, I'm writing this letter for everyone. You do not need to be an expert in anything green or metals or energy. I want this to be a low risk, how to just position your portfolio, get some things in there that do not carry much risk as long as you want to hold them for a few years. Because right now we're in this pause of uncertainty, but this is a paradigm shift that's playing out. So over the next few years, these theses will play out. How can you just position to benefit as this unfolds? And so we've sort of divided up the arenas that we cover, Peter and myself as the two writers. So I cover energy, and my main focus there is certainly nuclear, and then also solar, in so much as investing mostly in silver. And then metals, because we could talk endlessly about the supply-demand crunch that already exists and that the green shift is only amplifying. Mm-hmm. And then carbon credits. Those are sort of my three areas. Mm-hmm. And I just really see huge opportunity in all of them. Now, if you talk to probably Joe Average, an investor, about carbon credits today, you'd be like, no one's talking. Carbon credits are boring. They suck. No one's talking about them. Yeah. Absolutely, because it's all on pause. But once we get through, once the other shoe drops, as Eric says, whatever that shoe happens to be, and we know which direction we're taking, or I guess maybe better said, once we get back on a, okay, we got through that craziness, and now we're moving forward again, these things will step back into the light because they are needed in the structures and mandates that have been laid down around the world. We need more carbon credits. We need way more silver to power solar photovoltaic cells. We need way more nuclear energy. And this is, I think that's a really good example because nuclear is such a divisive topic publicly. But over the last 2 years, the change in public and political sentiment around nuclear power has just been palpable. Like it's just very apparent that people are starting to say, okay, it's what we have to do. If we want consistent green baseload power, nuclear is the only option. And then, you know, that there is a massive deficit on the uranium front. That's becoming more and more clear. There was a fuel conference about a month ago. A whole bunch of the talks and from that conference came out, and I was able to watch them, and people who visited put out notes about what was discussed. And I mean, everyone from the most staid conservative uranium analysts, you know, at UxC and at the Uranium Outlook analysts, they're like, this has never happened before. We just don't have the uranium that we need to feed this nuclear demand that is now so apparent. So I think there's a lot of opportunity out there for anyone who wants to position their portfolio for this paradigm shift that, like I say, is on pause right now. And that can certainly look at as an investment opportunity. People's attention has strayed away from silver and copper and carbon credits and uranium. They're not focused on it right now. But I see that as an opportunity to sort of get in and put those things, tuck those things away in your portfolio so that 3 years from now, you're grateful that you did.
All right. Evergreen Investing is the name of the letter. How can they sign up? I received this promotion here this morning in my inbox, Gwen, and I said, wow, this is pretty timely. We're going to be talking to Gwen Preston in a few minutes from now. And so, I mean, I know how I can sign up, but tell our viewers, where do they go?
Absolutely. It's evergreeninvesting.ca. So that's the website. If you happen to have my website open as a tab on your browser all the time, which I'm sure many of you do, you can also find it at resourcemaven.ca. But those are the two sites. It has its own website, evergreeninvesting.ca, or at my home site, resourcemaven.ca.
All right, Eric, with regard, I mean, this is a general question for both of you. We know copper, lithium, of course, silver. What are some of the other metals that are really, that you might be focusing, or either of you might think are important in the energy story, in the green energy story?
I mean, copper is the main one I'm following. Yeah. I mean, also nickel. I mean, nickel gets used in a lot of the same things. I give it half thought to aluminum, but the problem it's such a oligopoly. Just don't think there's a lot of room for gains in most of the producers, because there's like four of them to basically control the whole industry.
Right.
I'm not as much of a lithium guy, really. I mean, I recognize how incredibly well it's done. I suspect we're probably pretty close to the top, mm-hmm. if not past the top when it comes to prices, just because, mm-hmm. you know, we're not there yet, but we'll see a bunch of supply rolling in over the next little while. I think it'll be easier to grow supply in that market than it will be in, say, copper or nickel. I mean, copper, you're just dealing with big, expensive projects that take a long time to permit. Mm-hmm. The whole copper space has had grade issues with grade, average grades, mining grades dropped substantially over the last 15 years.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what turns that around, honestly. I'm not sure anything does. Nickel's hard just because nickel's nickel. I mean, good nickel sulfide deposits are very few and far between. Mm-hmm. There is a decent source of nickel in the saprolite stuff in the Philippines, and they seem to be on again, off again about how much they're going to support that production, because it's pretty dirty. I mean, if you're a green company that wants to source nickel for your anodes or whatever, I doubt you're going to be buying from those sources, because the carbon footprint's pretty horrendous on that stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, you can make an argument for almost any metal. You make an argument for zinc too. I mean, zinc, you know, zinc, there's a lot of uses. It's kind of a secondary metal. You know, a lot of it's going to be galvanizing and stuff like that, but it does get used. So rare earths, you know, I've looked at rare earths, and there's a couple of companies that I own, but it's another one of those where rare earths are tricky, because that sector is essentially controlled by China right now. And I have very not fond memories of a few decades ago, probably before Gwen was even born, being involved, because my dad was a director of Canada Tungsten, which at the time was by far the biggest producer outside of China. Canada Tungsten had a few phenomenal years, essentially because there was an earthquake in China and the epicenter was right in their tungsten mining area. Like it was a bad one. This was before China was really putting out much real news, but my understanding is that it was in the order of 500,000 people got killed. Oof. It was like an 8.5. It was bad. Bottom line was their tungsten production basically stopped for about 7 or 8 years. Canada Tungsten made crazy, crazy, insane money during that period, because the price went through the roof. And to me, rare earth kind of feels the same way, where so much of the production is controlled in China. It's going to be one of those tricky markets where, yes, the world needs it. It might take Western government, like, and say U.S., you know, say the U.S. Department of Defense says, okay, we want to see rare earth production out of the U.S. or Canada or Australia, and we're willing to pay X for those rare earth elements, but only if they're produced in those three countries. That may be what helps it, because right now, I almost jumped on a couple of rare earth stories, and then the two main ones, niobium and dysprosium, they both just got killed in the market. And I think that was straight up China dumping it into the market and just saying, no, we're the market. You guys don't get to start up production. Wow. So I'm a little leery about that one, even though it's an obvious area. I'm having trouble. The market's just so opaque.
Yeah, those markets are really difficult. I agree, and the learning curve as well. You know, it's just that's why I've pretty much stayed away and just stayed with the base metals and the precious metals. Well, let's just sort of finish up here by asking both of you what your maybe you want to name a couple of your top picks and what you might be talking about at the Metals Investor Forum. Who are some of the companies that you're inviting? Eric, we'll start with you.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'll stick to two or three companies that I'm actually inviting that we'll actually be presenting on Friday and Saturday. First one, Copper Story Pan Global. I've been a big fan for a long time. They've got a discovery called Romana in the Iberian Pyrite Belt. I don't know how big it is, but it's near surface, good grade. More to the point, they just got access to an area called Romana West. It's basically the next, you know, olive orchard, basically to the west of where they've been drilling. The owners agreed to give them access. There are old Roman workings that are several hundred meters from where they've been drilling off this resource. They've been in there. They really just got in there a few days ago, but they've already established that, yes, it's the same stratigraphy, and VMS deposits are stratigraphic, meaning they're a specific layer, a specific time horizon, because they basically come out of the vent and float down onto the seafloor. So knowing it's specifically the same stratigraphy 600 meters away means odds are, I mean, it's never 100%, but it's pretty damn close that between where they've drilled and those old workings, they're just going to keep hitting more copper. Mm-hmm. And it probably extends for 100 meters past that. So now that they have that nailed down, they're doing a bit of quick surface work. They'll have a couple of rigs on it. I expect they're going to be generating good drill holes for several months from there. Plus, they've got another rig or two testing new gravity targets, and any one of those targets could generate a boomer and a new discovery. So I just think it's a great story. I like that one a lot.
What kind of market cap?
About 100.
Okay.
Which is, you know, not unreasonable given what they've discovered already and where it is. Mm-hmm. I mean, people that don't know the Pyrite Belt kind of freak out when they hear Spain, but the truth of the matter is the Pyrite Belt's actually got a pretty good history and recent history and reputation when it comes to permitting. Stuff does get permitted there. Another one that I just, it was never off the list, but it was Visa Copper was a spinoff from Visa Silver. And I just let it sit on the list because the original projects they had were meh. I didn't think that much of them. I knew that wasn't what they were going to focus on. They recently added a company called Woodjam, which is a copper porphyry project in South Central BC. It's already got 200 or 300 million tons. The grade sort of meh, which is kind of standard for BC. BC isn't known except for a few cases for having high copper gold grades. What makes Woodjam more interesting to me is they have established that it is in fact a alkaic or calc alkaline type system. Hmm. That's the sort of systems that you see up in the Golden Triangle where you do in fact have high copper gold grades, especially gold. Mm-hmm. It's different from that kind of garden variety porphyry that runs through the center of BC that has some of which have size, but the grades are moderate. The other interesting thing these guys have picked up on is Woodjam in a couple of areas drilled quite high grade gold copper. And it was never clear why that was there or whether it actually went anywhere. What they seem to have established, and Craig Perry, who's the chairman, he's an Aussie, he's got tons of porphyry experience. He's fairly certain what those are is an equivalent to what's called the pencil porphyries in a North Parks camp in Australia. And those pencil porphyries, which are quite narrow, they tend to be quite long, kilometer or more. That's really what turned North Parks into a, you know, very garden variety, not great porphyry camp, into a real moneymaker. Mm-hmm. and a fairly famous porphyry camp. And these things are only, these porphyries that are a subset of the broader stuff, they're only like 50 or 100 meters in diameter. They're not big. But because the grades are so much higher than average, mm-hmm. if you can find three or four of them, that moves the whole grade curve up for everything. Mm-hmm. So they're going to be testing for new porphyry, but also for new pencil porphyry. They're just raising money now. More to the point, Craig Perry, the chairman, you know, he's told me this, he's viewing this as being his job for the next 2 or 3 years, and this is going to take up most of his time. Craig is a very, very good geologist. He's also an even better promoter. Mm. He's a He has a gift for understatement, let's put it that way. And if he's going to really get to work on this, you should be paying attention just for that, because honestly, Craig's fun to watch.
All right. Very good. Both those companies will be at the Metals Investor Forum?
Yeah.
Good. Yeah. All right, Gwen, your turn. What are a couple of your top picks, and who are you inviting to the MIF this weekend?
As it turns out, the MIF this weekend, I only have gold companies coming, so I have to stray away from our more green metals theme. I can't really pretend that gold is a green metal theme, but that's okay, because the companies that are coming are companies that I like a lot, and I'm also bullish on gold, just for different reasons. I'm going to put out one that is a more advanced opportunity, and that's Heliostar. I know this is one that probably both of you know quite well as well. Heliostar has gone through a transformation in the last year. They had a project up in Alaska, which is an interesting, good prospective project for sure, but they had some struggles with a bunch of things up there with seasonality and drilling, and the market failed to grab it. It failed to grab the market's attention, that Unga project. Charles went out and he's like, we need to do something different. And he went out and did something that was really interesting. He bought a project called Santa Ana, and it's permitted as an open pit mine. This is in Mexico, where Charles has most of his expertise. Mm-hmm. It's permitted as an open pit mine, but with sort of moderate economics, fine economics, but nothing sort of that stands out. But Charles and his team, another set of really good geologists, really just dug into it. And they've identified a panel of mineralization within that is, you know, averages 5 grams per ton, can be bulk mined underground. So they're re-scoping how this whole project will work. At the same time, there's good exploration potential because of the way that previous operators approached it. So this project is transforming Heliostar. I think they've done the best job they can of telling that transformation story, but there's always going to be a big part of the market that wants to see it. They're not going to believe it until it's happening, mm-hmm. as opposed to investing when the CEO says this is what's going to happen. They wait until it is happening. We're in that gap right now. So the people who bought in based on what Charles promised are in, and the price has moved up a bit because of that. But I think that there's now a big valuation gap between where it sits right now and where it can end up if they make good on any number of the things that they think that they can do. And none of these things are far reaching by any means. Most of them are basically right at the end of their fingertips. They just have to do a bit more work to show this aspect of metallurgy, or to define this aspect of this panel of high grade gold, right? So they're all pretty close at hand. So I think Heliostar has a very good chance of doing well from here in this gold market, because they're really taking an asset that was okay, and I think they stand a good chance of turning it into an asset that's really quite phenomenal. And then the other one that I will mention right now is Black Wolf. So Black Wolf is working up in just on the Alaska side, near Stewart, BC, right? The border runs right close there. So just on the Alaska side, they're working a project up there called Hyder. This is a pretty new acquisition for Black Wolf. And it is an area that was mined sort of back in the 20s. When they had to tunnel underneath the glacier to get there, they have some pretty cool pictures actually on their presentation of the tunnel that they had to drive under the ice to do this mining. Now, of course, the ice has receded and this is open, but somehow, even though gold silver exploration is sort of the heart and soul of the Stewart area, somehow this project was basically forgotten. So no one has really worked it since those miners were last there in the 20s and 30s. How big this is, what's actually there, we don't know. It has not been drilled in a modern way, but there are two vein sets that are quite obvious on a cliffside that spit out very high-grade samples. It is in exactly the right area because there's multiple projects and mines all right in that area that have exactly the same kind of mineralization with enough scale and consistency to make good economic sense, right? The Premier mine is right there. They had a section of their mine called the Jewel Box because it was just like, it's so rich, and right. So there's this mineralization exists right in that area. It seems to be outcropping in the cliff. It hasn't been drilled before. They're going to be in there and turning drills. I mean, maybe they are already. It's pretty close to sea level, so they don't have huge problems with waiting for snow to melt. So this is more of a, this is like an exploration punt, right? It, if it works, it could work really well. It could also not work because this is exploration, but the evidence looks pretty interesting. The team behind it, I mean, Rob's family basically grew up, like Rob is from Stewart, so he's very well connected. He knows how to operate in that area. So yeah, I really like Black Wolf as a, as an exploration punt in the gold silver arena these days.
Very good. And both of those companies will be at the Metals Investor Forum, I guess.
You're they will. Absolutely.
Wonderful. Well, of course, there's besides the two of you, there's other, I think Joe Masmeter is going to be there, John Kaiser, David Morgan, Chen Lin, my friend. Chen is going to be there. Peter Karath, your colleague there, Gwen, who's working with you. Greg McCoach, Robert Sin, and Jordan Roy Byrne. Those are the
people
I saw are scheduled to be there. It should be very good. Eric, any last word that you might have?
No, I mean, I actually like both of the deals Gwen just mentioned. I follow Heliostar as well.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, who knows on Blackwell, I go back a long way with Robin. I also find these veins kind of intriguing. They're sticking out of a cliff. When Gwen says cliff, she means cliff. So at the end of the day, the only real way to test them is stick a drill right on top of the thing. But yeah, I mean, I've always got time for Rob. He's a great guy. We got a good set of companies. I know it's been frustrating for everybody.
Yeah.
But I think things are going to break one way or the other, just because I don't see this current weird market being able to maintain this equilibrium that much longer.
Yeah.
You know, take your pick and flip your coin in terms of whether it breaks up or it breaks down, but I don't think it sits still. And I think in either case, that movement's, you know, either, as you know, as Gwen mentioned, it's either going to be a positive for all metals or it's going to be a bigger positive for gold and silver. So, you know, I don't think the time is that far off. So I think the timing is really good this weekend to look at a bunch of great stories. There's 20, 25 companies that are very strong set of exploration and development stories. And, you know, if all else fails in a market like this, it boozes frames.
Yeah.
It's not the light.
Yeah. Gwen, one last thought?
I'm excited to go myself. I always love to go so that I can hear what all of the presenters who you just listed, what their latest thoughts are, and because it's a great group of investors. So one of the things when people ask me, you know, how do I get into metals investing? I always say, well, one of the important things is don't try and do it alone, right? Don't try and figure it all out yourself, from the sort of the metals and the macroeconomics all the way down to the details of the companies and the geology. Don't try and do it alone. It's a huge amount of work. Eric and I both do it full time and don't feel like we have enough time to do it. So if you're trying to, you know, be a normal person with a job and do this on the side, you will fail if you try and do it alone. But one of the reasons that the Metals Investor Forum exists is so that you can meet other investors who also have ideas. You guys, you know, you can find people maybe who you work together with, share ideas with. And similarly, the presenters, we're also there just to talk, to trade ideas, to learn from each other. So I think this is a great moment to do that, a great opportunity. So yeah, I'm excited. Right.
Yeah, and I think one thing that needs to be mentioned again is the fact that the speakers aren't going there for pay. You're not recommending companies for pay. You're recommending companies after you do your own due diligence and you know, really study these things. Then you tell your subscribers and you share that information to some of us freeloaders as well from time to time. Thank you, Eric and Gwen. Really great to have you, and all the best in Vancouver. Wish I were there. I won't make it this time, but maybe in the future, for sure. All right. Well,
yeah, try to get out for one, sir. Even if we just fly up and get you to the dinner. I mean,
that would be great. That would be lovely to see you. That would be more fun than presenting, actually. Just going.
There you go. Let's do that.
We'll do that then.
I enjoy listening to both of you and all the other guys as well. So thanks so much again for being with me and sharing your thoughts and ideas with my viewers. All right, folks, well, don't go away, because Michael Hudson of Hannon Metals will join me in just a moment. Welcome back to Turning Hard Times to Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm happy to have Michael Hudson, the CEO and Chairman of Hannon Metals, with me once again. You know, I've asked Michael to sponsor today's show because, well, I'm a pretty big fan of Michael and all he's doing with this company, and especially since they've made some discoveries, some porphyry discoveries in Peru. I was quite excited before about their sedimentary copper-silver prospects as well, and I still am. But I guess this is something very special. It looks like it anyway for Michael, and he'll be talking about that momentarily. Before I say hello to Michael, I should tell you that the stock trades in Toronto under the symbol HAN. You can buy it in the US as I have under HANNF, HANNF. 109 million shares outstanding. Trading today, when I looked at it, around 20 cents in US money. That gives it a market cap of around US $22 million. Thank you for joining me, Michael.
Good morning from Australia, Jay. Lovely.
Ah, yes. To you. Yes, it's good morning. It's a little after 5 o'clock here. And what time is it there?
It's 7:11 a.m.
7:11. All right. 5:11 here, 7:11 there. 7:11. That's a lucky number, I think. Right. All right. Well, anyway, so you have the Japanese government's involved in it, with JOGMEC. It's a company they've carved out that looks to help, I guess, to find minerals around the world that the country needs for its business, for its industry. And then you also have Teck, the largest mining company in Canada. Both of those companies are partnering with you in one way or another. I think JOGMEC is a joint venture and Teck is an equity partner. Do I have that right?
Correct.
Yeah, and really you haven't drilled a hole down there yet. And these guys are coming after you. Obviously, they see something there, Michael. What is it that you think has them excited and interested in partnering with you there in Peru?
It's the key question, I think, Jay, and it just shows that the world is short of copper. You know, you know all the metrics. We're going to mine more copper, consume more copper over the next 20 years than we have for the history of the world. So this whole electrification has really put a rocket under it, and it was already a rocket under it before mm-hmm. the transition narrative really started. So it shows the big companies are looking for big deposits. We set out a number of years ago and said, where can we make the big discoveries? And we had got to that stage in our career where we could raise money against, you know, big ideas, I suppose, rather than sort of starting at the smaller scale, maybe where we went when we were younger and starting from the known around legacy deposits. And we ended up going into the back arc of Peru, which is one of the last untapped frontiers in a major copper jurisdiction. So that's really, I think, the simple answer, that we're doing something a bit special.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly these are the kinds of companies, especially Teck, from my understanding and from my experience, are not going to fool around with something small. So they see potential for world-class, world-scale projects, so they're not going to go there. But this copper porphyry target that you've talked about, that you're very excited about, Valiente, I think. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, it's more than one porphyry. It's probably at least 17 porphyry, wow, integrated porphyry skarn epithermal systems that exist over 150 kilometers. We're one of the larger landholders in Peru. We've found a new porphyry district, and it is Miocene in age. What the hell does that mean? That means it's the right age, basically, about 15 to 20 million years old, which are the key, was one of the two key producing metal epochs in the Andes. Mm-hmm. These porphyries shouldn't have existed out into the back arc, which is about 80 kilometers east from the major arc or chain of porphyries and epithermal deposits high up in the Andes. We're in the high jungle, so about 500 to 1,000 meters altitude, but it's nice and jungly out there. So it is a new porphyry belt in the world, and we've got the first mover advantage, and that's what Teck really came into the company for. You know, they did their due diligence, came to site, talked to us for a long time just how to get involved. It's something a bit unique, right? Where Peru is very slow to permit to drilling. You know, I'm drilling in various parts of the world at the moment, and it takes weeks to months to get drill permits, but it takes years in Peru. Oh. And that's the challenge in Peru. And so we're really just putting a pearl necklace, if you like, or a chain of projects together. One area over 15 kilometers, two porphyries and a 3 kilometer long epithermal and skarn systems that form around the edges of these porphyries is ready to drill. And we're going through the permitting for that now. And then we're just building up these other porphyry areas. We've done big scale surveys, stream sediments, mag, got 10 geologists on the ground, and really doing something very unique. So over the next 6 months to 5 years, you'll see us drill porphyry after porphyry after porphyry.
Well, yeah, it lasts over the next 5 years because it's so massive. But when might the first drill holes go down? Is that anytime soon? You talk about it taking so long in Peru. When might we see the first drill holes go down in the Valiente as well as some of the other projects?
Yeah, so just from a higher level, I will answer that directly. We've got the JOGMEC joint venture, which is a sediment-hosted copper over 100 kilometres, and that's what JOGMEC are fully funding. We should see permits come through soon this year on that project. I'm not giving days nor months because Peru will always disappoint us, but that everything has been done and that's ready to go, and it's just in the final stages of getting the feedback or the tick off from authorities. At Valiente, we've just started a process to permit. So we're probably a year away in Valiente. Then we've got two other projects. One we're drilling in Ireland at the moment, which at least there's drill rigs spinning, but not in Peru. And then we've also got another project in Chile where it takes 3 to 4 months. So we're just finishing geophysics there. So there is drilling action, and that's why we brought other projects in to fill the gap, essentially, because it's very hard to have a public company waiting for permits, even though the opportunity is palpable and it's been validated by some of the biggest copper companies in the world. So that's drilling in Ireland today, Chile, if the geophysics works within the next 6 months, JOGMEC this year, ideally in Peru, and then Valiente in a year's time.
Okay, I guess that's pretty much establishes your priorities then. And you're pretty well funded, I believe, at this stage.
Yeah, we just closed a $1.7 million financing. So we've got over $3 million in the bank. JOGMEC fully funds $1.6 million US, so 2 million Canadian. I was just talking Canadian dollars there. Despite my accent and talking to somebody in New York, there's currencies everywhere here. But the company's well funded and funded to drill in Ireland and funded to go to drilling in Chile and funded to get through the permitting in Peru. So now cash is not the issue.
Yeah. So in Ireland and Chile, I guess Chile is a copper porphyry type of a target. The same thing. And what do you have in Ireland? What's the nature of that target?
Yeah, Ireland's a bit of a legacy project, but a very good project. So obviously copper silver in JOGMEC joint venture, copper gold. We've got these alkaline porphyries in Peru, which are a little different. They're the gold rich porphyries. So that changes the potential economics quite a lot, because and the gold companies are going after those copper gold porphyries as well as the copper companies now. And then in Chile, it's just a copper project. In Ireland, it's lead, zinc, silver. Okay. So we founded the company. Hannon was a guy called Paddy Hannon who found the Golden Mile in Australia, but he came from Ireland and he was in this little village where we set up there in 2016, 17, 18. And we did millions of dollars worth of exploration, lots of big seismic surveys. And Ireland has been a top 10 producer of lead and zinc for the last 40 years. And we've got one of the best targets there, and we were going to lose ground or we kept it by spending some money. So we kept it at a minimum and we're testing that target. Yeah. That we developed at Kilmurry.
Well, you're doing it right in terms of, you know, minimizing shareholder dilution with your big guys coming in there to spend the bucks to earn in one way or another. And you have some really exciting targets, I guess, if they let you drill. But at least you'll have some news coming out of Ireland and Chile, probably. And then hopefully later in the year, if I'm hearing you right, from Peru, at least from the sedimentary target, right?
Correct. You haven't heard a lot from the JOGMEC joint venture in the public domain over the last year. That's really taken a back step in the news flow. But we've continually got three or four geologists on that project. We're looking at expanding that project with more ground. We're picking up more ground and continually working socially, breaking into these areas. Into these new areas has taken a lot of work to educate stakeholders about what we're doing, and for the majority, the most part, we're very well accepted by the local people, and that's another key aspect. How can a small company break into a new porphyry area or a new sediment hosted area? That's because nobody's looked and nobody's cared to look, because those jungle areas were just considered tough, and they were 20 years ago the drug trade down there, but that finished about 20 years ago. From a logistics point of view, it used to be helicopters, but now it's roads everywhere. And then because nobody had been down there and done the hard work with the communities, it was always deemed too hard. But that's not the case. People want prosperity and wealth and responsible development, and that's what we're doing and working with all those groups. And we work with, tens and tens of villages, and we have a big social team also working down there with us, right through to the regional authorities and into Lima.
Well, that's essential, isn't it? And it seems to me, Michael, that you, first mover is a term I associate with you almost, because I think the sedimentary copper silver thing, you were one of the first to start exploring that. And that is a very exciting story as well. And so I think you have an awful lot going for you for a $22 million market cap company, Michael. I don't know. You know, I interviewed Gwen Preston and Eric Coffin earlier today for this show. And Gwen's view is that right now it might be a little difficult for the base metals, but she's extremely bullish longer term because of the things you mentioned, the electrification, you know, the green movement. On the base metals, and Eric is too. I think it's their thinking is that if we're going into a recession, not guaranteed, but if we are, it might be a little bit rough right now, or maybe there won't be a lot of enthusiasm, although they're so beaten down, it's hard to see how they can be more beaten down. But then, you know, once we come out of the other end, the other side of the recession, there should be, you know, a huge upside for some of these companies. But if you can get some great drill holes, some great drill intercepts in the meantime, and that could be really exciting, provide some real opportunities, Michael. I think so. So I guess the drivers, we want to see if we can see some drill results. That's the main thing, right?
Exactly. And that's why we've got a few other projects drilling now to essentially wait for the slow permitting in Peru. But the opportunity in Hannon is palpable. I think of Hannon as potentially, you know, a private company. It trades, but you know, you invest in it and you put it in your back pocket and mm-hmm. you wait, and you know, let's see those drill holes. But there's multiple $1 billion plus opportunities, $1 billion market cap opportunities hiding in any one of those porphyries, especially, which is what I like very much. But equally, you know, the JOGMEC JV or Chile or Ireland could change our fortunes too. So it's just one of those things that just takes a little longer than the explosive drill hole in 2 weeks that the market really likes. But I'm doing that in other parts of the world too. But this one's the big slow sleeper as we wait for those drill permits.
Well, maybe we'll have to ask about some of the ones that aren't so sleepy while we wait for the sleepy one to wake up. So anyway, Michael, thank you so much for your time and sharing the Hannon story with us again. And we'll look forward to some drill results soon, I hope. And I know you hope even more so. But thank you so much for being with us once again.
Thanks a lot, Jay. You'll see drill results pretty soon from Chile, hopefully, and Ireland and JOGMEC this year.
Really looking forward to that. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right, folks. Well, that's it for this week. Next week, I expect to have Michael Oliver with me and perhaps a very exciting company as well. Until then, goodbye and God's blessings to you.